This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Would you be willing to see a doctor or a nurse through a computer screen? It's called telemedicine, treating patients remotely through telecommunication and information technology, and it's on the rise in Michigan. Nancy Derringer looked into telemedicine in her story for Bridge Magazine. Always good to have you with us, Nancy.
Good to be here.
How does it work? Take us through the steps for the patient.
Well, it depends on what kind of telemedicine we're talking about. But if we're talking about northern Michigan and rural Michigan in particular, it's a way you can have at least your initial consult with a doctor for certain types of procedures via a high-def video conference link. It's great for some easily diagnosed things. It's great for other not so easily diagnosed things. Dermatology is a wonderful way to use telemedicine. The VA system, which has a lot of patients that are all over the state and not necessarily near a major hospital, they use it a lot to monitor chronic conditions. And what they will actually do is put a device in your home, a blood pressure machine, for instance, or you know something else, kind of an iPad-type tablet. And then you check in every day, and you take your blood pressure every day, and it's transmitted to a nurse at the hospital, and then she'll take a look, and if you're in the red zone, she will call you. There's also some feedback that actually comes from the machine itself. It might say, your numbers are a little high. Did you take your medicine yesterday? And if you forgot, you can say, well, no, I didn't. So then the nurse may not have to call you. I mean, if you can think of all the ways that traditional businesses have been disrupted by technology, I think medicine is just ripe for this. And I think it's really, in a lot of ways, a better way to treat many, many people.
Well, it sounds like just for logistics, there's that, cost efficiency.
Yes.
Freeing up the waiting rooms at the hospitals for people who are perhaps not monitoring a chronic condition.
Right, exactly. It keeps the VA doctors who actually need to see people in person who are really, really sick, they have more time to do that. If the people with the low-level chronic conditions are being monitored by a machine. The big thing, though, I think is still, you know, the Upper Peninsula. If you've ever talked to a doctor or Northern Lower Peninsula, and they'll say, you wouldn't believe the job offers that we get. Okay, you want to stay in Ann Arbor? Fine. We'll fly you up twice a week, you know, and all expenses paid, that sort of thing. I think this is a way to get specialists seeing patients virtually in a much more efficient way than sending them up there. You'll notice in my story, one of the women from the Marquette General Hospital said, you know, we'll have somebody come in for some surgery and then they need a routine visit, follow-up visit, and they may live several hours away. They shouldn't have to drive that far for a 15-minute visit.
I'm talking with Bridge Magazine writer Nancy Derringer, whose piece, A Different Kind of House Call, The Doctor Will See You Now Remotely, looks at telemedicine in Michigan, treating patients remotely through telecommunication and IT. And there have been some concerns, Nancy, over privacy. And in your piece, you note that Skype and FaceTime and other mass market video links aren't necessarily compliant with HIPAA and privacy standards. So what are doctors currently saying?
In so many technology issues, everybody is kind of like putting one foot in front of the other and not going any farther than they can see with their headlights down the road. But, you know, the hospitals are very concerned that these links be secure because obviously for HIPAA. Mm-hmm. And so you may have, and of course we all know that broadband high-speed internet is a lot harder to get in rural areas than it is in cities. So you may even have high-speed internet in your home capable of maintaining a decent visual video link with your doctor, but they're going to want you to go to a clinic. You know, so you may have to end up going to a clinic that's 20 minutes away and sitting in a room and having a consultation with a doctor. So it's not exactly like, you know, texting your doctor, but it is closer. The Northern Michigan hospitals are building facilities that have those like super high capacity internet pipes so they can have these glitch-free consults.
And for hospitals and these healthcare groups, how are they billing patients for services?
I believe it's pretty standard now. In 2012, the legislature passed a law that established parity with telemedicine visits with in-person office visits. And so you can bill the same way. I'm interested in whether these can be done a little bit cheaper. There's been some stories recently about pharmacy chains like CVS and some others, I think, out in the American West that have set up these clinics right there in the drugstore.
Absolutely.
You know, with maybe a physician's assistant. And if you've ever had to get a hold of your doctor to ask for a prescription for something you know what you have because you've had it before and it's not available over the counter, and you know, sometimes you have to call. You can't email, you can't text, you have to call, and then they say, well, we don't, you know, we still need to see you because we're not sure it's, and so,
and they've got to cover themselves
exactly
because there is the outside chance that the prescription they might give you over the phone doesn't help, and then
exactly
they could get a call from a lawyer,
right? Exactly.
They,
so, you know, you think
protective
of
medicine,
exactly, all the ways that that would be a more efficient way to deliver healthcare to patients. It's really, I mean, it's going to be a really interesting field to follow.
Well, I thought it was interesting in your piece you point out Minnesota recently added a special physician's medical license applying to telehealth so doctors from across state lines could treat patients in Minnesota. So we're seeing more and more movement toward this.
Right. And, you know, I have a feeling there are probably a lot of doctors who are out there doing this in a gray zone. Mental health is a prime example of this. All right, say you see your therapist every week and you're going to Florida for the winter and you still want to at least check in once in a while. There's a lawyer quoted in here who has done some research on this who says, technically, your Michigan licensed psychotherapist cannot treat you if you are in Florida unless they are also licensed in Florida. But I think that also if both parties are willing and, you know, I think that, that this probably has to go on.
But it is gray.
It is gray. Absolutely.
Legally gray.
Yes, very legally gray. And with medical licensing, there are certain exceptions that are made for, you know, if you're in an emergency situation,
Good Samaritan,
you can treat somebody. Yeah. Or if you're within 30 miles of a state line, Olympic athletes can be treated by their own doctors in foreign cities. So there's all kinds of little exceptions, but nothing blanket for telemedicine. You know, Minnesota tends to be way out ahead of other states on a lot of these issues. So this may well be the model.
What do you hear from medical professionals? Are they embracing this technology by and large?
I think they are very, very interested in it. I think they see it as a way to make their own operations run smoother. The psychiatrist that I talked to at Michigan State said, you know, this is perfect for us. This is, I mean, psychiatry, it's not exactly the same as seeing somebody face-to-face in the room, but it's the next best thing, and it's very close.
Well, and it's the specialty where you don't have to feel for enlarged lymph nodes.
Right, exactly. I mean, you know, anything where you don't necessarily have to lay hands on somebody. But even in those situations, you can have a nurse or a PA at that rural clinic who is in the room with you saying, okay, it feels a little weird here, or I can see this, or I'm palpating this and I can feel something. So, I mean, there's all kinds of ways to do medicine better. And I think telemedicine is going to be an interesting, really interesting field with some potholes. There's always potholes. But I think it is ripe for disruption.
Nancy Derringer's piece on telemedicine, a different kind of house call. The doctor will see you now remotely can be found at bridgemi.com. Nancy Derringer, always great talking with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Jed Megan is an osteopathic psychiatrist who teaches at Michigan State University's College of Osteopathic Medicine. Dr. Megan, welcome.
Thank you.
What are the challenges in getting your graduates to set up practice in rural areas?
First, rural areas are just not intrinsically as interesting. There are many more things to do in a city. So from that standpoint, people are much more attracted to larger metropolitan areas. Secondly, there's professional isolation. And that's really an issue of, especially in psychiatry, are there other psychiatrists around who you could share things with, talk with, and so on? And you just don't have those kinds of opportunities in rural areas. Thirdly, it's the work level. And so if you're the only psychiatrist or one of the few in the area, you can get overwhelmed very quickly. And so there's no relief, there's no backup. And those kinds of things are the real issues, I think, that make it difficult for people to locate in those areas, even people who have some idea that they may want to go to those kinds of areas.
The reality can set in. It probably is pretty easy to idealize it, and then the reality of what that might be like might set in.
It does.
How do you see telemedicine addressing that problem?
Well, so telemedicine is really a mechanism by which you show up on a video screen. The patient's in an area somewhere else, often a community mental health center, perhaps a hospital. And so what that does for you is that it really improves access. So if I'm sitting in East Lansing and patients are sitting in, say, Escanaba, which is about 400 miles away, it's impractical to get there any other way. If you go there, you're taking at least a whole day seeing patients and then coming back. So via these kinds of telemedicine operations, you can see people on a convenient basis for them and for the psychiatrist And so you just got much better access.
And your specialty of psychiatry strikes me as one that would really lend itself very well to this, no?
It does, and it's a huge shortage area.
Would there be situations in psychiatry where it would be better for you to see someone in person, or can you pretty much do what you need to do through a monitor, through telemedicine?
I think most people's experience, and certainly our experience, is you can do most things. There are a couple of things that are problematic. One is acute violence. We can't do anything about that, and those people really need to go to the hospital almost no matter what you do. And the second would be acute suicidality. So somebody who is really very acutely suicidal also just needs to go to the hospital, and sitting in front of a television screen with us won't change that. Beyond those two situations, one can handle most things that come along.
Now, when you first heard of telemedicine and the idea, were you skeptical?
I think that when I first heard about it, actually, I was very interested and relatively enthusiastic.
What about the patients? How do you find the patients react?
Yeah, it's interesting. You would think that people would be somewhat resistant, would have questions and so on. But our experience, and we do a lot of telepsychiatry, is we have almost 100% acceptance.
Well, you know, when you think about it, we are FaceTiming with our grandkids and Skyping with our kids. And it is something that is, I think, in our consciousness and in our daily experiences much more now than even 5 years ago.
Yeah, I think that's true. But the interesting thing is that even people who, at least my impression is, that they don't participate often in electronic kind of media also accept it.
Why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's partly an access issue. They want to be seen. They need to be seen. And if this is the only way it can get done, they're actually enormously grateful.
So any downside to this that you can see?
Well, you know, it is a two-dimensional screen, so it's not quite like being there. So it's a little different, but it's pretty close. The idea that you can't have a personal connection with a patient over a screen, I think, is not true, but it is not quite being there, and you have to recognize that.
Where do you see this technology going in the future, Doctor?
Well, I think it makes so much sense that the only way it's going to go is to become more and more prevalent. It's really probably one of the few ways we can increase access. And that's a huge issue, you know, especially with the ACA, with the Affordable Care Act now. More people have insurance of various kinds, and so more people can afford to have access.
Increase access and, I would suspect, keep costs down.
Well, that's not entirely clear, actually. Hmm. So you would think that, well, you know, more people can get taken care of, and so that's going to be helpful. And it is certainly in terms of medical care, but there is some research that suggests that actually, as more people get access, actually they then access more services. And so it might be that you're actually increasing the cost of care.
Interesting.
Now, the tricky part of that is, then what are the downstream effects? Well, if people are healthier, you know, maybe they're more productive, maybe they're happier and so on. So maybe overall it saves money, but we don't really know that.
An interesting physician's eye view of telemedicine, and in this case, telepsychiatry. Talking with Dr. Jed Magan, psychiatrist who teaches at the Michigan State University School of Osteopathic Medicine. Doctor, thank you so much for taking time.
My pleasure.